seconds. Bryant for the win.
Interviews from your favorite local coaches and athletes.
He's getting to the basket of will, and he's hitting that three-point shot with some consistency now, and he's just in a groove right now where he's pretty well unstoppable.
Hall of Fame and legendary guests.
I was driven by loving to play, liking the challenge of being an NFL quarterback, but after 18 years, I was 1 month short of 39 years old. It's time to go.
Analysis and insight on the latest national sports topics. Live, it's Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.
Football Tuesday. Welcome to a brand new edition of Drive Time Sports. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini. One of the more important Football Tuesdays that we have throughout the year here on Drive Time Sports, because the draft is now over, and I'm going to venture to say rosters are, what, 90% set at this point in time? We still have some free agency news that I know will trickle in. Roster cuts, obviously, will play a big role before we get to the season opening week at September, so still a little ways away. But for the most part, rosters are set. And yesterday here on the show, I went over the three teams that I really, really liked in the draft. I like the Jets. I like the Browns. I like the Bears. Those were the three teams that I really, really liked this past weekend in the draft. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about some of the other moves. And I also want to go over how colleges themselves performed. Alabama had six first-round draft picks. Six. And we knew this going in. Jaylen Waddle, Devontae Smith, Najee Harris, Mac Jones, all first-round picks. All key contributors on the offensive side of the ball. We're not even talking about Patrick Surtain. We're not even talking about Christian Barmore, who went in the second round, but was arguably the best defensive tackle in the draft. We're not even mentioning those guys. Ohio State also performed beautifully. They had 10 players selected. Notre Dame and Georgia were second at 9. BYU only had 5 players drafted, but they had 12 total when you take the drafted and those who signed undrafted free agent deals. They had 12 going into the NFL next year. So we'll talk about that as well. On the local sports front, we're going to be joined today by Coach Jim Jukes of the Carbon Dino track and field team. The girls, they are Eastern Utah champs. They took home the top prize in that meet just this past weekend. Two more meets on the schedule for the Lady Dinos. Coach Jukes is going to join us in just a bit, actually next segment. So let's take a quick commercial break. We have a lot to get into, but it's Football Tuesday right here on Drive Time Sports. Back after this.
What you listening to?
Big sports radio guy.
Prepare the water cooler, that we may gather around it later and discuss things.
It's time for the Coach's Corner on Drive Time Sports.
As we continue to move forward on the spring sports schedule, we're getting down to it. The spring sports season is so compact. Already in May, so just a couple of weeks left before we wrap up the 2021 sports season. Two track and field meets remain for the Carbon Dinos. That's it. The region championship, the state championship. That is it. Everything else is finished. They did pick up a first prize on the girls' side of the track this past weekend at the Eastern Utah Championships. We're going to talk about that and the schedule ahead for the team. Joining us right now over the phone, we have Coach Jim Jukes. Coach, as always, a pleasure. Thank you.
No, thanks for having me on, Jordan. Appreciate it.
Yeah, definitely, Coach. It's go time. It's crunch time for this team now. I know the Eastern Utah Championships just took place, and Coach, we'll talk about that because, once again, you get a dynamic performance from your girls' squad. The boys also perform very, very well. But for starters, we got to talk about the schedule the rest of the way, because now we are really down to it. We have the region championship, and we have the state championship. That is about it as far as the track and field season is concerned.
Yeah, you know, when we get into that, you know, we get through that Eastern Utah Championship, and then, you know, they usually have BYU scheduled for this weekend, and we decided, hey, you know, we want to rest and be healthy for the region championship that we're hosting at home. And state's not at BYU this year. It's up at Davis High School. And so, you know, there was not as big of an advantage to go to BYU as it has been in the past or an incentive. And so we decided to change up the way we're doing things this year and kind of get ready. I mean, it seems like we're on a roll with both our teams right now, especially with the girls' team. And so It's going to be a lot of fun to see kind of what happens here.
Yeah, Coach, I know it's similar, we'll say, in swimming as well, right? Whenever you have an opportunity to go and kind of get the feel, the lay of the land, especially for these kids who maybe aren't as experienced at that state level, it's important. And so knowing that it's not at BYU this year and you guys won't necessarily have a chance the week before to participate in the same venue that state's going to take place, I mean, how do you simulate that or get these kids ready for that experience? Because it is unlike anything that they've experienced up to this point.
Right. You know, and that's the thing is I think that because we can't simulate that, we're not even going to try. And so I think what we're going to really focus on is not even looking ahead to the state meet. We're looking and solely focused on region next week. You know, we got really two goals, and one is to go in and get as many kids qualified for state as we can. I got to take top five in every event goes to state. So we have a lot of kids we want to see go to state. And then the second goal is this to place, you know, win the region title with the girls and the boys team if we can do that. Those are the two goals that we want to focus on this week, and that's kind of what we're gearing towards. We've kind of been a team that's every meet we go to has been a lot of fun, and we've had a lot of success, so we're hoping to just keep it rolling.
All right, let's talk about the Eastern Utah Championships. Again, you guys get to play host to this event, and Coach, on the girls' side, the competition, well, there's a wide gap once again, which has kind of been the reoccurring theme. The Carbon girls put up 188 points, second place at Union at 136. That's a lot of points, so a big gap between first and second place. And Coach, you bring in nine other schools for this competition as well, so when it's all said and done, how impressed were you with the way the girls performed?
I was super impressed. I mean, we looked at it. I talked with the Union's coach a little bit. I knew that they were coming to win the meet. Union had got us over at their place. That's the only time. They're the only team that beat our girls team this year, and it happened over on their facility. But he didn't know that we had stacked our relays that day, and we weren't really trying to win. So he called me up and said he was coming over, and I said, well, you know, let's see how it goes. And on paper, I thought it was going to be really, really close, but man, this team I've got, these girls just, they perform. Like, they just step up to the occasion, and they know it's, you know, some kids, when you put the light on them, they can fold, and some just excel. And we've got a lot of kids that just excel. When pressure's on, they just find that next gear and find a way to get it done.
Coach, it seems like the distance runners really have set the pace for you guys. I know that there's been some tremendous performances throughout the entire year, but they kind of get the ball rolling. At least that's what it appears on the girls' side of the track.
No, they really do. You know, you look at that girls' side, and you know we got five, six, seven girls on that distance team that is just, they're great. They work together, and they really set the pace for us. You know, Beverly Lancaster's been huge for us this year. She's done a lot of good things. And, you know, you got Ambry Jones that does a lot of things. You've got Erin Stromness, the senior, that kind of helps anchor that team. And she does a lot of good things as well. And, you know, you look at some of those girls, and it's like they just find a way to make things work, and they find a way to keep it going. And with their place in 1, 2, 3, 4, they usually have four in the top eight. It's a lot of fun to watch those girls.
Individual performances, and I know you and I have talked about Haley Prescott before, but Coach, she was fantastic at the Eastern Utah Championships as well.
Yeah, she was. She had a fantastic meet. You know, she went out and she'd been kind of disappointed in her high jump the last couple of weeks, but she's been, you know, pulled five different directions while she's been over trying to high jump, and she finally got a chance to, you know, be focused on it and jump, and that really helped her out. And then, you know, she ran a new PR in the 200, and then she also long jumped, you know, 16:11, a new PR there. And so Haley can do a lot of things for us. You know, she can, you know, in that region, I'm not sure, we haven't kind of sat down on what events we're going to have her do to help us out, but she's one of those that's just, she's like a Swiss Army knife. We can put her in anywhere, and she can make it work.
Again, our guest right now is Coach Jim Jukes of the Carbon High School Track and Field Squad. Coach, let's move over and talk about the boys. I know it's a second-place finish behind Union, but really, again, you have a lot of standout kids. Riker Childs, he continues to pick up right where he left off. 110-meter hurdles, had a time of 15.3. In other events, he battled out with Trevin Brazier, taking second place in the 100 meters, and that's a specific matchup that you and I have had conversations about earlier on in the year.
Yeah, you know, that matchup between Riker and Trevin, it was a lot of fun to watch this weekend. You know, Riker got him in the 110s. Trevin went down on, I think it was hurdle 9. He went down on as they were neck and neck coming down the thing. And they both wanted it so bad, and you never want to see a kid fall like that. And Trevin went down in that, and so I'm anxious to see what, you know, region brings. I mean, they're the two best hurdlers in the state. I'd say arguably across all six classifications, and so I think it'll be fun to see. I think Trevin will come geared up to go after record. But the cool thing about those two is, you know, they're friends off the track. They talk, and you know, our kids and their kids, you know, that's just a fun rivalry to watch. You know, it's one of those when they get done, they talk to each other, they communicate, and I think they both know that region's not the one that they care about as much. They want that state one.
Well, that was going to be my next question for you. I mean, I know that there's added pressure whenever you host a region championship. And I think in all sports, Coach, the first goal is always a region crown. And you guys will have an opportunity on both the boys and the girls' side to do this at home. I mean, you don't get that opportunity every day.
No, you don't. And going after the region title at home, and it's been 20 years since our girls have won a region title. And it's been 18 since our boys have won a region title, to kind of put that perspective. And we have never won a boys and girls region title in the same year at Carbon High. I went back and looked, at least unless somebody can show me when it happened. It happened before I can see anything that I can see in the trophy cases or anything like that. And so this is going to be a fun year because both our girls and boys are right there. They've got an opportunity. You know, you look at our teams and we're deep on both sides, you know, and it's going to be a lot of fun to see how it pans out. You know, I think on the boys' side, it's going to be really entertaining because I think you got three teams vying for the region title that kind of have the lead there. You got Richfield, Emory, and Carbon. And whenever you have Emory and Carbon going for a region title, it's going to be fun.
Yeah, so, Coach, you guys get this entire week off, and then it's the region championship next week, and then you'll get about a week off, and then you go to the state championship. And so how do you push these kids between now and then? And once you get to the region, how do you push them knowing that state's right around the corner? How do you handle that as a coach?
Well, I think right now our biggest thing we've been preaching all week is get healthy. I think the last two weeks we had three meets in there, and it was, I mean, we're banged up a little bit, and so our big thing is getting everybody healthy. We did make a few changes at the last meet. We ran Sadie Johnson in the hurdles that she'd never ran before, and she surprised us and ran really well. And you know, like Sophie Taylor on the distance side, she's had some really bad shin splints this week, and so. And at the meet, she got it through it and ran. And I think getting those kids healthy and getting some of these kids that maybe are going to be in a little bit different event at region, getting them some more time of practice will help. And so I think it's really, we just kind of try to keep them focused and say, hey, this is, you know, next thing we do. And in practice, we're kind of just doing the same thing we always do, not changing it up too much and just kind of saying, you know, we're going to go after it. Make sure that the big key is healthy, just being healthy. If we're healthy, I think we're a tough team to stop. But if we have any setbacks, and that was one of the things we looked at with BYU, is you don't want to have a kid go up and blow a hamstring out or have something catastrophic happen the week before region, especially that close. And so, and nowadays you got to worry about COVID too. So.
Right. Coach, we can end with this. Just looking from afar, I have to believe that this has got to be the best time for you as a coach, based on the fact that you've put in all this time and effort. You guys have put all the work in to get to this point. Here we are now, two more events to go. A region championship is within the realm of possible for both the boys and the girls, and then a state championship is also within the realm of possible. This has got to be a blast for you as a coach, just trying to pinpoint how to approach this.
It is, and it isn't. I think from a coach's point of view, it's way fun to see these kids have the success they have. Trying to put them in and line them up in the right situations, give them the best opportunities they have is a lot of fun, but it's awful stressful because we've got kids, I mean, we're so deep that, you know, there's going to be kids that are not going to get to participate in region that really have earned the right to kind of be there. And so it's kind of hard when you get that far and you've had them. The one thing we talked to the kids about this week was, look, you're on the team and you've helped us get this far. You're still a big part of it, even if you don't compete at region, because it takes everybody on this team. This team has been a complete team, and the kids that are fifth or sixth or seventh on the depth chart have helped the kids that are first, second, third, and fourth become who they are. And so our big thing has been just preaching, hey, let's get the team. And it's been, as a coach, it's stressful to try to manage all that and get it all figured out. And so I'm excited to see what happens, but at the same time, you always worry that you're making the right move and it's going to work right. So.
Well, Coach, again, a tremendous performance from your team at the Eastern Utah Championships. Congratulations on that. Best of luck ahead of region, and I know we'll talk again real soon. I appreciate the time.
Nope, sounds good. Thanks, Jordan.
Again, that's Coach Jim Jukes of the Carbon Dino Track and Field Team talking about the upcoming region championship next week and then the state championship the week after that. We've got a break for just a moment. It is Tuesday, Football Tuesday. The NFL draft is now complete. We'll talk college football. We'll mix it in with the NFL. It's all coming up when we return, and it's here on Drive Time Sports, 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
Since they want to know. You're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
Football Tuesday here on Drive Time Sports. The dust has kind of settled from the NFL draft. The final big offseason boom before we get ready for August, which is going to be here in 3 months. Isn't that great?
It's awesome.
Isn't it?
That's
We're 3 months away.
Real preseason and real training camp back.
Yeah.
And for us football junkies, nerds, whatever you want to call us, the preseason's amazing. The training camp practices are awesome. Joint practices are actually the coolest thing ever, even better than the preseason games.
I agree.
If you get to see the film on them or highlights, they're awesome. So, yeah, that's going to be amazing.
I think that preseason is going to be more interesting this year because we only have three preseason games.
Yeah.
It's going to be better, right? Because that fourth week of preseason is awful. It's terrible.
It's just back into the roster.
I don't even know what it's at. Half the time, teams are set. I mean, maybe a position or two, But I think preseason is going to be a lot better. So let's talk about the big training camp storylines. And we know that number one and number two will be Aaron Rodgers and Deshaun Watson.
Yeah,
we know that.
Yeah, and we don't know what's going to happen there.
So throw those out because all that talk is hyperbole. That's all that is at this point in time. For the record, I do believe Aaron Rodgers will be a Green Bay Packer, and I do not believe Deshaun Watson will be playing. There's my opinion on what's going to happen.
I agree with you 100%. Deshaun Watson will not be playing football this year, and Aaron Rodgers has no choice but to play for the Green Bay Packers.
So what's the biggest training camp storyline that you're looking for? And I guess to kind of phrase this, if we're talking about I'm going to give you the five best teams, okay? Five best teams in my mind post-draft. I think you got to throw your Super Bowl champs in because they return everyone.
Everybody.
Right? They got better this offseason.
Yes.
They're the Super Bowl champs. I think you got to throw the AFC champs in there with Kansas City. I think you throw Buffalo in there, and I'll talk more about the Bills in a minute because I love what they did in the draft. I'm going to put the Rams in there because they finally have their quarterback situation figured out. And then if we're talking the number five team, boy, you could go a couple of different directions. Dare I say the Cleveland Browns?
You know what? I love what some of these teams have done. So I think 15-5 is splitting hairs.
Close.
Injuries and, it'll be so close and so competitive. Injuries and special teams, kickers could be the difference between 15-5, honestly. I think there's a group of teams right now that you could really jump on. I like your Rams. I agree with you there. I love Buffalo. The Browns. I love the Browns.
I do too.
And, for a dud in the playoffs, they were a dud in the playoffs. I'm high on Tennessee.
Yeah.
I like what they did.
Yeah.
Bud Dupree, I think they made some moves to help themselves. I really like their draft. Love their draft, especially if Caleb Farley's healthy. I really like Tennessee. I think they could be right in it. And, I'm a homer. I know I'm going to hear it from people. But I'll tell you, if the Chargers are healthy, which is a big if for everybody who knows the Chargers, hey, they could be right in that.
Yeah, you don't have to worry about being a homer. I mean, these are storylines that are legit going into training camp. And I'll throw one out. Let's start with the Saints. Let's talk about the Saints.
Because interesting team.
It is. And this is a new era. And I thought that they were one of the most interesting teams over the weekend. We know that Drew Brees is gone. It's going to be weird to see someone else
very
under
strange.
Center. It is going to be strange. Okay, Jameis Winston, Taysom Hill. It's got to be Taysom Hill's job, right? I mean, they're paying him a lot of money. Well, not a lot of guaranteed
money
there, right?
Yeah, that's a fake contract.
It is a fake contract.
It's a fake contract.
You have Jameis Winston
job.
On a one-year deal, but you draft a quarterback in the fourth round, and you draft the all-time winningest quarterback in Notre Dame history who climbed draft boards. I think it was unthinkable to say that Ian Book was going to be selected 2 years ago in the NFL draft. I don't think you would have had that conversation.
No, I agree with you on that.
He's maturing physically, and there's a lot to like there from a leadership standpoint. The Saints draft Ian Book in the fourth round. That may be the most interesting storyline for me going into training camps, the fact that you have three quarterbacks that I could see playing meaningful snaps regular season-wise under center for the Saints.
And, the Saints have their way of doing things. Mickey Lewis, Sean Payton have been there a long time. They zig when other people zag. Some of their draft picks, they're always getting, you know, called out for reaching and reaching. You know, the Turner kid, their first pick, you know, got slammed instantly.
That was odd. I didn't quite understand it that night.
They got slammed instantly, especially with Davenport, Cameron Jordan, what's going on there. But again, I liked your point in the fact that, you know, Ian Book, when you look at him, he looks a lot like Drew Brees physically.
Mm-hmm.
Drew Brees was not a great physical talent. He was not. This is a guy, I got my picture with him, and I'm telling you, I'm bigger than Drew Brees. So he wasn't tall. He didn't have a rocket arm. He didn't run great. But the intangibles, the leadership, and the mental part of the game. Well, you don't become the all-time winningest quarterback at Notre Dame if you don't have the intangibles. So Sean Payton can build the rest. So that's a very interesting storyline. I'm with you on that. I think New Orleans is an interesting team. That division's interesting. I'm going to go with it with the division because it was so close last year. But then Tampa Bay's defense ended up winning it, not Tom Brady. And they were joining everybody.
That's a good point.
Odds are, in history, odds are that through free agency, you don't repeat. So it's very hard to do so, even though they're the world champs and they're favorites. They should be. But odds are they're not going to win the Super Bowl. I don't know. Atlanta now, Kyle Pitts, my favorite pick in the draft. Maybe Atlanta taking Kyle Pitts.
He may be the best player in the draft.
Yeah, I think he was the best player in the whole draft.
Yeah, he may be.
Carolina, I love what they're building. Listening to Matt Rhule call the players the other day was awesome, man. He was incredible. So I like that whole division, Jordan. I think the NFC South is very interesting right now. And I think it's the tightest division. I know people are going to say the AFC West, the NFC West. They got a little something going on over there, too, in your division. But I like the NFC South being real competitive.
The South is going to be competitive. I think the AFC South is going to be competitive as well.
Absolutely.
You mentioned Tennessee. You know, one of the things that stood out to me with the Titans, when you go back and you look at that draft, they lost some personnel, some key personnel.
Right.
And they did not go skill position player in the draft until round four, if memory serves me right. Round four, when they went with Des Fitzpatrick. I think that was the first skill position player they selected in the draft. Okay, so you look at what's happening in the AFC South front to back. Indianapolis has a new quarterback,
mm-hmm.
right? We have Houston, throw them out. It's a horrible situation. But then Urban Meyer, we got to see him in his first draft as well. So the AFC South is going to be equally interesting.
I don't think it'll be as close.
It's not going to be as close. It's going to be interesting, though.
And we don't know how it's going to turn out. If Wentz plays great, I think Indy's the favorite. Now, if Wentz plays like the last 2 years, then Tennessee should run away with that division. And I really like what they're building there. I was a bit disappointed with them in the playoffs. I thought that was a dud, and I really disappointed in that team. I was high on that team, and I thought they were going to go all the way. But Urban Meyer, that was the next point I was going to make. Guy that we know, you know, guys we both talked to, Urban Meyer, a guy that really got on the map at Utah. How does he transition to the game? What does that team look like? You know, Trent Baalke had a lot of success in his career in the front office. And I believe the offense coordinator is Daryl Bevel. He's had a lot of NFL success. But what does the team kind of look like? You know, you take a college guy that he made it known, hey, I'm not going to be coaching X's and O's in the NFL. I'm going to be building a environment, a winning culture. What does that team look like? And I'm excited to see.
I'm excited to see the steps that they take, because speaking of the Colts, let's go back to when Andrew Luck came out. Correct me if I'm wrong here, Vinny. I can't think of anyone at the quarterback spot, or any spot for that matter, that had the hype surrounding them going into the NFL draft as Lawrence to Luck within that time frame.
Mm-hmm.
Can't miss prospect, right? Yeah. We've been talking about Lawrence as being the number one pick for 3 years. It was the same thing with Luck.
You already knew it.
You knew it going in. The Colts had a big jump in Andrew Luck's rookie year. I believe it was like 7 or 8 games, if I'm not mistaken.
I think they only won 2 years when Manning got hurt. They were
2-14.
Yeah, 2-14.
And I think they won 10 or 11 games the next year. It was a big jump. This Jacksonville team's not built in that regard. They're not built the same way. But how big of a jump can we expect from Jacksonville? How much better does A, Urban Meyer make them, and B, Trevor Lawrence make them right out of the gate, now that we kind of know what this roster looks like?
You know, I expect them to win 6-7 games. I really do. I think that's their area there. I think they'll be improved. He's still a rookie quarterback,
mm-hmm.
and it's still the NFL. and Clemson did not run a lot of NFL concepts.
Nope.
That's not an NFL
nope.
offense. So, you know, I think that's their window, 6-7. And when Urban Meyer, when you take these jobs, you're looking at year three. I mean, most jobs, you're looking at year three. Sometimes you're lucky. Sometimes you come in with an established quarterback, and you can speed that way up.
Well, let's be real. When we're talking about Urban Meyer, you have about a 3-4 year window.
Yeah.
Tops. Wherever he's been, it's 3-4 years.
I expect him 6-7 games to be competitive. I don't think they get blown out a bunch. 6-7 wins and a fun, exciting brand of football. I really think Jacksonville will be maybe not fully relevant, but you know they're there.
Yeah, and I'm fine with that. I'll tell you right now that I'm going to be watching a lot of Jacksonville Jaguar football in 2021. I'm looking forward to the season for the Jaguars.
And
I really
am. There's two teams I'm excited about, two Midwest teams that I'm really excited about. One I think is far above the other. One of the teams you mentioned, Cleveland.
Oh, my goodness.
I am excited about the Cleveland Browns.
Here's a stat that's going to blow your mind with Cleveland. They came back into the league when?
1999.
Okay, 1999 they came back into the league. Here we are at 2021. This will be the first time since 1999 that they've had the same starting quarterback coming to camp three consecutive seasons.
That's mind-boggling.
Since 1999, Baker Mayfield will be the first quarterback that enters training camp, the solidified starter, since they came back into the league.
Wow.
That's 22 years that we're talking here.
That's crazy. But I really like what they're building. I think there's some continuity now. I think Stefanski was incredible last year. They're healthier. I like Clowney as an edge piece away from Myles Garrett. You know, I he doesn't have to be a star.
Right.
If he plays good football, that defense is going to be way improved. Their free agency, their draft, everything point. I really like the Cleveland Browns. And another team I'm interested, I don't think they take a big step here. And don't get me wrong, I'm not picking them to make a ton of noise, but I am fascinated by the Detroit Lions. I want to see Chris Spielman and Dan Campbell and these guys, Anthony Lynn, Aaron Glenn, I want to see what the product looks like. Because last year they were lifeless. Matty P, just, it didn't work. And they just look dull. And I just think the energy of those guys, I just want to watch the Detroit Lions to see what it looks like. Now, I'm not picking them to blow the doors off anybody or win that division, but I think they're going to be a very improved team and a very tough team and a very competitive team.
Here's the thing about the Lions. For one, Jared Goff, you're going to be hard-pressed to find a more interesting quarterback moving into 2021 than Jared Goff, because this is a guy that has never had a losing season as a starting quarterback in the NFL, a full-time starter.
Yeah.
Never had a losing season.
It wasn't
season.
Very long ago. He was in the Super Bowl.
That's right. He was a Super Bowl quarterback. On top of everything else, I don't know, can you recall a guy who was a bigger punching bag for a winning team than Jared Goff at quarterback?
No.
I can't either.
And now in a market of Detroit, it's not like an L.A. market.
No, it's completely different.
And I think they're setting him up to run the ball and make him successful. And I really like what they're doing there. And I just want to see the energy. When they made their draft pick and they picked a tackle from Oregon, that draft room come completely undone. That was an amazing scene.
Yeah, but do you know why? Because when you look at Penei Sewell, you got probably the third best player in the draft by default at number 7.
But, I mean, just the energy, though. When they made that pick,
you had to be ecstatic to grab him.
It wasn't just a couple high fives or a couple fists. You know, it was, they were jumping up and down, screaming, hugging, fist bumping, chest bumping. It was an awesome scene, and you could just tell the energy. Now that front office, a guy from your Rams to Chris Spielman to Dan Campbell, all the way down, you just feel the energy there. And I'm thinking, I want to watch this team play.
Yeah.
I want to watch them play.
Yeah, it's a new era. It's similar in a sense to what New Orleans is going through. Anytime you have a quarterback, and Matt Stafford goes down as the greatest quarterback in Lions history, right?
Absolutely. Okay. Hands down.
Drew Brees goes down as the greatest quarterback in Saints history. Anytime you transition into the next season, and it's a team legend, not necessarily Drew Brees as an NFL legend, I get it. Matt Stafford, nah, not quite, but he's a team legend. It's interesting to me.
There's intrigue.
There is intrigue to see, you know, the next step. And when you talk about Sewell, there were six teams ahead of the Lions drafting for need. That's why Sewell dropped to 7.
Absolutely.
Because there was no need for those teams, maybe outside of Cincinnati, who needed some help on tackle, but instead they saw Ja'Marr Chase and they said, we can't pass up on this guy. He's our replacement for A.J. Green, who was a freak of nature for however many seasons in Cincinnati. You got Sewell because six teams above you drafted for need. Top four player in the draft. I don't think there's any doubt about that.
There were some scouts saying he was the safest pick and the best pick in the draft. There was a lot of scouts that would say he was the number one guy on the board. Most people had Pitts as the number one guy on the board.
Mm-hmm. Again, Atlanta was the beneficiary of three teams ahead of them drafting for need.
Yes, and I just like the energy. Like I said, your guy come over from the Rams. He's running that front office now. Chris Spielman is, I don't even know what Chris Spielman's title is. Executive VP of Operations or something? Chris Spielman is just a lion.
He's a cheerleader.
He's a lion.
Yeah.
And then Campbell and then Anthony Lynn. Anthony Lynn's a good man and a good football coach. And he had some tough breaks. But as an offense coordinator, I think with Jamal Williams and DeAndre Swift and Jared Goff, now Sewell, Tyrell Williams, a guy he knew, I really like this offense being real competitive. Like I said, I don't expect him to win the division, but I think the Detroit Lions are going to be a tough out as a team now.
Still lacking a little bit on the outside.
No doubt.
But maybe a little one-dimensional offensively, and that's not good for Goff, but
they're
going to
be a
something.
Tough out.
Yeah,
and you can tell they're going to be physical, and they're going to play hard. So that's an interesting team to me. And another one, too. I'm going to throw another one out here, Jordan. We've been going a long time. Arizona
probably had, you and I were texting during the draft and we brought you on a couple of times. Arizona was in a spot picking 16. When you're at the position of Arizona, see, that's the spot where I'm envious. If you're a fan, you got to envy where Arizona's picking at 16 because it's a good football team and a great division.
Yep.
Okay, so they are better than the 16th pick. We know
right.
this. They're
yep.
better. They go with Zaven Collins, a kid that I love, a kid that when I look at Zaven Collins, he went to Tulsa. It's similar to Khalil Mack in a sense, mm-hmm. right? If this is a kid that played in the ACC or the SEC, we're not talking about Zaven Collins being the 16th pick in my mind. He comes from Tulsa, though. Now you can team him up with Isaiah Simmons. You have to succeed defensively in that division. Cliff Kingsbury's an offensive coach, but you have put the pieces defensively around an offensive-minded coach to be successful in the NFC West. Yeah, I like Arizona quite a bit, too.
They're interesting. J.J. Watt. If J.J. Watt, J.J. Watt played very well. If he's healthy and on a pitch count, watch out. Chandler Jones, Isaiah Simmons, Zaven Collins. Man, they got some guys in the front that make... Hey, the only way you can beat these quarterbacks nowadays is what? To put them on the ground.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You have got to stop a drive by putting them on the ground because the NFL wants them to score. The NFL designed for them to score, and they're going to help them score. So you have to politely sack them. You have to just set them on the ground, but you got to get them on the ground. And Collins can pass rush.
Yep.
Collins can drop. So, interesting. Rondale Moore. I just think this could be fascinating there. Cliff Kingsbury and Kyler Murray putting together something there. Christian Kirk's still there. You signed A.J. Green.
Mm-hmm. Who's on? And let's be fair. This is not the A.J. Green of 5 years ago.
No.
He's on par with Larry Fitzgerald, but that's why you draft Rondale Moore.
That's why just electric.
Yeah.
The ball's in his hands. He's electric.
Yeah.
Christian Kirk can play. A.J. Green, he don't have to play 40 snaps a game.
Nope. It's not why you brought him in.
That's not why you brought him in.
Yep.
It's third and six. Hey, you bring him in and he's playing a third corner, he probably gets open quite a bit. You can limit his snaps and put him in a position to succeed. So I'm interested to see if Kingsbury makes another step forward because I can see him surpassing Seattle. With these guys, if they take a step forward, I can see them surpassing Seattle. We don't know with San Francisco and with Stafford. I think the Rams got to be the favorites in the West. If Jimmy G's healthy, Nick Bosa's healthy, and everything works, Shanahan, the Niners are going to be right there, though.
We got to get out for a quick commercial break. We'll continue the NFL draft chit-chat now that it's in the past. We can break it all down. It's Football Tuesday, and it's here on Drive Time Sports, 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
Now, more Drive Time Sports on KOAL, 107.3 FM and 750 AM, the play-by-play home of the Emory Spartans.
Football Tuesday here on Drive Time Sports, continuing to break down the NFL draft. Jordan Buscarini alongside Vinny Rondinelli. If you watched, listened, or paid attention to the NFL draft, you heard two schools name in particular an awful lot, Alabama and Ohio State. That's the Urban Meyer effect, by the way.
Yeah.
I'm not willing to give that to Ryan Day just yet.
Yeah, those are Urban Meyer's recruits.
Those are Urban Meyer's kids, right? So to put this in perspective, Alabama had 6 first-round picks. 6. That's incredible to think about.
That's an incredible haul of talent.
They had 10 players get drafted overall. Ohio State had 10 players as well. Those two teams played in the national championship. That's not a coincidence.
No, top talent.
And Vinny, I've said this on the show for many years, and you and I had this conversation last week before the draft. You and I had this conversation that Nick Saban is in a world of his own.
Yeah.
He's the best college football coach, in my opinion, of all time.
Of all time, yeah.
He can have the title. Then after that, I have a really hard time putting anyone above Brian Kelly or Kirby Smart, and that includes Dabo Swinney. Now, Dabo's in the conversation, don't get me wrong. I'm just saying, if anyone tells me that Brian Kelly or Kirby Smart are ahead of Dabo, I'm going to listen to the conversation for a couple of different reasons.
You're not going to laugh.
You're not going to laugh at that.
You're not going to laugh at
that. Those are the 4 best coaches in college football.
I agree, and you're seeing it in the way they're getting drafted and how they're getting drafted. Again, like you said, the national title game had Ohio State and Alabama 10 apiece. That's an incredible number. That's half of your starters almost, Jordan.
It's and their NFL.
That's incredible. And then you go into these other teams. Again, Dabo's done a nice job recruiting, and he's kept it going. But you know, we'll see. You know, he's had some excellent quarterback recruits that saved his program. You know, his quarterbacks almost kind of saved his program, Watson and Lawrence. And he's never won anything without either one of those two. So we'll see if he keeps that momentum going.
Right. Which I think he will, by the way.
He will.
I think
great coach. Will. Great coach, no doubt. Kirby Smart, same thing. He's a quarterback. It just seems like he's a quarterback away, right?
Yeah.
He had Alabama beat, and a freshman walks in, throws a bomb, and Alabama squeaks one out against him.
Yep.
With a great quarterback, he wins that game.
Yeah.
And he's a national. He's got a national title. To your point, I'll back you. I know you get called Notre Dame homer, but the fact is, you look at the talent that gets drafted in Alabama, and the talent gets drafted in Notre Dame, and you can see the disparity. But Notre Dame makes the playoffs. Why? Because he's that good a football coach. And for those who don't agree, switch rosters and see what happens.
Yeah.
Switch rosters.
Look, this is the funny part for me when it comes to college football talk. When a team falls short, like Notre Dame loses to Alabama, the game was 14-7 in the second quarter. That game should not have been that competitive. It should not have been.
Oh, no. Talent-wise.
It's not even close. So when a team falls short, we immediately start directing the negative talk towards the coaches. And I think when you look at the amount of players that were drafted for schools across the board, there are some really good college football coaches out there that get their name dragged through the mud because they're not winning national championships. Well, guess what? The greatest college football coach of all time is coaching at the moment, Nick Saban. It's going to be pretty damn hard for you to win a national championship.
And people that, you know, there's a valid argument for Urban Meyer being one of the greatest football coaches of all time.
Maybe one of the greatest football coaches of all time, Benny.
Well, and he was winning some of those.
Right.
You know, you had a team that was incredibly loaded that Ed Orgeron just won one 2 years ago. Well, guess what? A lot of that talent got drafted. That was NFL talent.
Mm-hmm.
And they play a part in recruiting these guys. We're not taking anything from them. These are the top college football coaches in the world. I mean, these guys are incredible. But you're splitting hairs. You're right. I mean, you know, people bashing Brian Kelly. Hey, where was Notre Dame before him?
You can't bash Brian Kelly.
You know, anybody that's been on Dabo's program slipping, where were they before him?
Right.
Ryan Day has to keep momentum going because Urban Meyer brought that program back from the dead.
There was actual talk of the death penalty.
Yeah, they were dead in the water, and he just takes them right back to the national champion. So, yeah, you're right. You're splitting hairs. And it shows in the draft. And get back to that, it shows in the draft and how many of these kids are getting drafted. What'd they say? 65 players were drafted this weekend from the SEC.
That's incredible to think about. 65 players. You know what else stood out
to
me?
That's a quarter of the whole draft came from that one conference?
Came from the SEC. And yeah, because you're looking at 10 players from Alabama, 9 players come from Georgia, 8 players come from Florida, 7 come from LSU. Kentucky had 6. University of Kentucky had 6 players drafted this past weekend.
That's incredible. That's a mind blower to me. 2 first rounders from Northwestern this year.
Yeah.
How about that?
Yeah.
That's pretty awesome.
But Vinny, all this talk, and it goes back to what's happening in North Dakota State. Three quarterbacks have now been selected. Yeah.
People forget about Easton Stick. Easton Stick's playing in the NFL right now. He's playing for the Chargers. And in between, in fact, that's funny because you went Wentz, Easton Stick, then Trey Lance. You know who had the best numbers and had the most success?
In college?
Overall?
It was Easton Stick.
Easton Stick.
Yeah, it was.
And he was a fifth rounder.
Mm-hmm.
So that's an incredible stat right there. Three quarterbacks in a row from North Dakota State are in the NFL. Who'd have thought that one?
And when you take into consideration undrafted free agents, I got to give BYU props here. They had five players drafted. I believe now it's up to 12 players that have signed contracts to play in the NFL next year, or at least preseason, based on undrafted rookie contracts. Kalani Sitake was on the hot seat. He put 12 players in the NFL. I know there was a lot of talk around the state of Utah. Was his last season a fluke for BYU in the competition that they played? Vinny, it's no fluke when 12 players from your team find work in the NFL the day after the draft.
Yeah,
that's not a fluke.
That's true. That's a great, great job by his team. And you know, undrafted free agents make a huge difference in the NFL.
You put some money in that. Yeah, you find some money.
And you know, it's funny you mentioned that, going back to the draft. Jordan, once you get to about the middle of round six, you're better off not getting drafted.
I agree with that. Yeah, I agree with that.
You are literally better off. And there's some agents, and I know some of these guys at the back end of the draft make some noise to not get drafted on purpose. Then they get their choice of teams. And you can sign a bigger contract because there's no limit on that. So some of these big names, they fell into that. I mean, last year there was talk Marvin Wilson was going to be a first-round pick. And he signed a nice big contract undrafted with, I believe it was Cleveland.
Mm-hmm.
Last year he was a first-round pick. And now he's got an undrafted free agent contract. So, yeah, you're right. Once you get to near the end of that draft, you're better off not getting drafted so you can pick your spot. And you have some leverage because other teams, there's a bidding war now. And every pick slotted in the NFL when you're drafted, that money, you don't get to, there's nothing to negotiate.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. And you know that as soon as that draft is complete, you got a lot of these guys receiving phone calls immediately. Their phones ringing from three or four different teams minimum. But Vinny, talking about the amount of kids that were selected, we knew this going into the draft, but I guess I didn't think about this until the draft was over. So when we were watching Alabama last year, their quarterback was a first-round draft pick. Their running back was a first-round draft pick. Their top two wideouts were first-round draft picks. Their guard was a first-round draft pick. And they had an elite defensive back that was a first-round draft pick. That is incredible to think about. You want to know why 31 points was the least amount they scored? Well, there you have it.
There you have it. And then talk about the defense.
Yeah.
Second round, you have a defensive tackle go. The center goes. I mean, they just... The list goes on and on. Now, 10 of those guys get drafted. That means 10 kids right now are going to be playing next year for Alabama that are highly recruited. Who knows what the draft hall will be next year?
Yeah.
It could be as many. I mean, six first rounders?
Yeah, so I guess the reason I bring this up today and the reason I know you and I wanted to talk about this is because in today's world, we get so caught up with wins and losses. And trust me, I understand. That's why you play college football, right? You want to win a national championship. That's the goal. But if you don't win a national championship in the Nick Saban era, I'm not going to say it's okay because, again, that's what you get paid millions of dollars to do, right? Win a national championship. But I understand.
Yeah, and some of the odds are against you. And here we go. One of the most respected guys on the stage at the NFL draft was a college football coach, right? David Shaw.
Mm-hmm.
One of the most respected coaches in the country. He has the same recruiting standards as Brian Kelly. David Shaw ever been in the college football playoff?
Nope.
He's never even been there.
Nope. Been close.
He has the same recruiting standards as Brian Kelly. How'd Brian Kelly get there? Don't tell me it's because the Pac-12 is so amazing.
Right, because that's not the case. We know that's not the case right now. No, we know that.
Oregon had a nice little, you know, one year they look great. Yeah. USC's have talent. Talk about football coaches. How come USC isn't in the college football playoff every year?
They had five players drafted this last weekend.
That talent right there in their backyards is as good as anywhere in the country. Why aren't they in the college football playoff?
Correct.
So, yeah, some of these things, you know, the field's not level in college football. Whether they say it is or not, it's really not.
It's not uniform. No, it's not uniform.
It's not uniform. No. The amount of scholarships is, but that's the only level trait we can go off of, Jordan, is you can have this amount of scholarships. Now, after that, how you get in, All those other things are different for every school. And I'm going to say it's a lot easier getting to Alabama than it is Notre Dame to play football.
Well, and again, got to tip my hat to Alabama because I want you to think about this as well. Jerry Jeudy, Henry Ruggs, Jalen Waddle, Devontae Smith.
Yeah, 4 and 2 years.
You rewind the hands of time 3 years. Every one of those players were in camp at Alabama. Every one of those players. And it kind of goes back to the idea, Kirby Smart, Sony Michel, Nick Chubb, Todd Gurley. It's fairly remarkable when
you
think about it.
He had 5 DBs drafted this
year.
Kirby
Smart had 5 defensive backs
drafted
this year.
5 defensive backs. His entire defensive backfield got drafted.
And I
know, how incredible is that?
Yeah, and I know that people get tired of hearing about the SEC. Trust me, I'm one of them.
I hear you, but no, the facts are the facts.
Yeah, they are. And that's the point I'm trying to make here, that the SEC, has it set the standard for college football from a conference standpoint? Yes, it has.
Yes, it has.
It has. It just has. I mean, that's the story.
They are
the
cream of the crop.
They
are. Are they completely dominant? I mean, are they light years ahead of everybody else? No. But they are the top conference, no doubt.
They are the model conference right now for college football. Again, 6 first-round draft picks. That's just, it's mind-boggling.
That's just incredible.
And we're talking about skill position players for the most part, right? These are skill position players. Outside of Barmore, who, again, best defensive tackle in the draft, goes in the second round, in my opinion. Again,
yeah, he just slid because of some concerns.
Right.
They weren't physical.
No.
So, yeah, Dickerson, if he's healthy, is he a top 15 player?
He's close.
It could have been 7. Could have been 8.
Could have been 8. Realistically, could have been
8 first-rounders.
Yeah, realistically, could have been
8. The board falls a little different, and there's some medical and personal 8 first-rounders.
Alabama has done some incredible things in the world of college football. We are out of time on this edition of Drive Time Sports. Vinny, look forward to it now that the offseason, we're 3 months away, really 3 months away from preseason football. So there's a lot of storylines that are going to be popping up here relatively soon.
Oh, I can't wait.
Yeah, the lull is kind of over as far as the NFL offseason is concerned. He's Vinny Rondinelli. I'm Jordan Buscarini. We'll be back to do it again tomorrow. Be safe. We're out.